The Earl Ingram Show is an independent production and has a joint sales agreement with Devil Radio. Enjoy!
Good evening.
Welcome to the
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And as we await a call from my guest, I don't know, Sandy Williams on the line? All right. Hey, good afternoon, Sandy. How you doing?
Well, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and it is
It was like a flashback being a lawyer and waiting for jury verdicts to come in, just sitting there this afternoon. I was, you never know. You never know for sure.
Well, you know, when I heard that the verdict was coming, there was only one person I would call, and that's you. And Sandy, give us what did we just witness? What just took place? This in a trial of this magnitude? Why was this trial different? And what does it really mean?
Well, I think the big difference was that the evidence that was presented to the jury was really 100% of it almost available to the general public, and it was available at the instant of the crime. That video was essentially, I'm sure, all the prosecutors had to put on in the way of affirmative evidence other than covering their bases in terms of establishing the cause of death and defending against the notion that this guy whose back and neck were kneeled on for 9 minutes died of something else. But, I think the magnitude of it is that the whole public saw this crime, and then the jury was going to go out and bring back its decision based on the evidence that everyone had seen. And so, we've had other situations where things are videoed, but nothing quite this stark. Almost all the other videos have involved instantaneous decisions being made by a cop and drawing his gun and shooting on an instantaneous judgment basis. There was nothing instantaneous about what Chauvin did here. He kneeled for 9 minutes despite the protestations of people standing around and watching. So I think the real issue here was if these officers hadn't been convicted, there was no ability for the public to say, well, maybe the jury knew something we didn't know. And so I think it was kind of vitally important in this particular instance that the jury reached a verdict that was probably in conformity with what everybody who saw the video concluded themselves.
So, Sandy, if I'm understanding you, and you spoke very clearly, there was no choice. The jury had no choice in this based on that video that everybody saw. They basically had no choice.
Well, I mean, of course the defense gave them some choices. The defense, I'm sure, told them that this was a tactic, even though the chief of police said that he was acting beyond the scope of the appropriate conduct by an officer. I'm sure that the defense said that what he was doing was an appropriate action for the policeman to take in that time frame. And, there might have been a time when a jury was so sympathetic to police officers that they could have decided to go that direction in spite of the video. And, we can all just thank our lucky stars that that didn't happen in this case, because I'm sure that would have caused some real consternation amongst everyone who would have thought that was a miscarriage of justice. And it wouldn't have been possible for the defenders of the system to stand up and say, that jury knew something you didn't know. So I think it was important that the verdict went this way, But we should understand that jury verdicts can always go almost any direction, because counsel on both sides are usually very good at providing the jury with enough reasons to go this way or that way.
You know, Sandy, even with this verdict, there are people who will say, see, now the system works, and we should never challenge whether the system works or not on one side of the equation. But there'll be others on the other side of the equation who will say, this is just one case. You can't say that now there is that police and police tactics are going to be completely overhauled because of this one case. Where are we with that?
Well, I think it's just one case. I think that I was going to make that point, that that's what jury verdicts are. They're each one of them is a unique decision, and juries don't make decisions based on what some other jury did at some other time. They aren't even allowed to be told about that. So this is not the same as a Supreme Court decision, which gets handed down and makes law, right? This jury verdict simply made law in this particular case, in which it said, if you are in Minneapolis on that time and at that place, and if you put your knee on the neck of a person you're arresting and sit there, you know, that's going to be getting you to jail. But so I do think what might be compelling to police forces is, number one, the fact that maybe this would scare them into thinking other juries could act the same way, number one. Number two, I'm confident that the city of Minneapolis is going to pay a fortune, they already have, in damages in a civil suit as the result of this. So, you know, while civil damages has not scared many police departments to date, because many of them have given some pretty big dollar amounts, including the city of Milwaukee.
Right.
I think enormous verdicts will scare them.
Well, you know, the taxpayers, it doesn't impact the police department. They don't pay it out of their pockets. It is right. The citizens who wind up footing the bill for that. And it's whether or not, Sandy, as you well know, citizens have had enough of the limited resources going to cover people who have not done the right thing.
Well, I'm afraid that so far, at least, there hasn't been much in the way of a public relations effort to try and tell the public how much of their tax dollars have been spent for this kind of civil damages claims arising out of police misconduct, because it is millions of dollars. And it's been millions of dollars each year in Milwaukee, I think, for a number of years.
You know, Sandy, even though they had some police officers and police officials who said, including the chief, that what Chauvin did was not keeping with the practices of, police. Let's clearly understand that there are many, the code, the blue code, many people who, and police officers who supported and backed Chauvin because, you know, it's the brotherhood. And and if nothing else, maybe this will maybe scare some of them straight. We hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that this was a unique circumstance in which, in this criminal trial, there were definitely breaks in the blue wall. The chief of police and others were testified in a very straightforward way and didn't pull any punches. And I think it has been the case in most all of the big publicized cases in the past that there has been testimony testifying to the fact that the decision made by the officer could well have been reasonable within the circumstances.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone lines and Alan. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
You have a question to come in. That's who's with us right now.
All right. Who, Oh, that's all. Okay.
Yeah, that's our guest. All right. I brought up that window just so you had it.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
All right. Hey, you know, Sandy.
Nobody's called me Alan since I was in high school.
Exactly.
Hey, Sandy, my bad. but I tell you this, Sandy. This situation and. I looked at, did you see Chauvin's, the look on his face? I mean, he's had time to reflect on all of this, and he's had time to drink this in. And do you think the defense, you being a former, and still, I guess you're not former attorneys, you'll always be that, a barrister. Do you think that the defense, looking at it the way it was, knew that it was an uphill battle? You know, in most cases, you know, his attorneys, I think, Sandy, were from the union side of things and his representation. He didn't have a lot of money. He couldn't go out and get the best attorneys that money could buy. But what did you think of his defense team?
Well, I think it seemed to me that they did as good a job as they could given the circumstances they were handed. And, you know, they were having to reach for their defenses, and one of the prime defenses they could reach for was that this man died for reasons other than the knee on his neck, and you know that was going to have to be the primary defense, along with the defense that the knee on the neck was the appropriate thing to do given the circumstances. You know, and I think they played both those cards. The thing that astounded me by the appearance on his face was that it looked like he wasn't altogether prepared for it. You know, which struck me as sort of a sociopathic approach to it, because that would show that he was kind of oblivious to the potential that he would face.
You know, Sandy, the other part of it, and we can say a picture is worth a thousand words. There was a guy in New York, a big guy, I can't think of his name right now, who was selling cigarettes. And a guy weighed about 300 pounds, a big guy, and...
Oh yeah,
And the police choked him.
Yeah, he was selling individual cigarettes. You know, the right. What do they call them? Lucy's.
Yeah, Lucy's.
Selling Lucy's to people on the street.
And police put a chokehold on him, all on video. And So, what was different in that case than this one? The police walked in the other case. What was different? That was on video. That was clearly police officers choking a guy till he died for no reason. Why was that one so less egregious than what we saw in George Floyd's case, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, first of all, different juries look at things differently. That was a New York area jury, not a Minneapolis area jury, and they might well have a different pool that they draw from with different inherent attitudes. Also, the chokehold was a controversial hold to use against someone, but it actually, there was lots of police testimony and expert testimony saying it was okay. So there was that kind of potentially reasonable practice testimony to support him. I still think that most juries, if they're given enough excuses for the police, will find in favor of the police. I think the problem for Mr. Chauvin was that there were some policemen lined up against him, and there weren't very many good excuses for what he did and what everyone saw that he did.
You know, I was listening to, as many people were, as this trial was building up, and even during some of it. And I got to tell you, I didn't watch much of the trial, even though I was hearing from friends that the prosecution put on a great prosecution, mm-hmm. that you know, I should have been ready for the fact that he's going to be found guilty. It wasn't so much the prosecution, Sandy, or again, the evidence was just so overwhelming. We've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. On the line, Sandy Williams. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.
My name is Rocker, and this is my vodka. Rocker Vodka is distilled right here in Madison, made from corn and gluten-free. Find Rocker Vodka at Woodman's, Festival Foods, Trixie's Liquor, Star Liquor, Steve's Liquor, Willie Street Co-op, Total Wine, Vic Pierce, Miller's Market, Cambridge Cooler. Find more at rockervodka.com. It's yummy. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Hey, Darcy, I just saw the perfect house, and I want you to help me write an offer on it.
I'd be happy to, Dom. Were you at the open house?
No, I just called the sign and had the agent show it to me. I don't want to bug you.
Oh, Dom, how many times have you heard me say don't call the sign?
But
you called the agent working for the seller, and once you see the property with that agent, I'm no longer free to write an offer on it.
So
you need to hire us from the beginning, help you find the right home, negotiate on your behalf, and protect your interests all the way through the process. And it shouldn't cost you a dime.
Solidarity Realty. They're real, they're solid, and they're honest. Find them at SolidarityRealty.com.
Hey, Dom, is your carpeting starting to have a little bit of a funk to it?
That's a bit of a personal question, Crudy.
No, I know this is a really busy time for one of our sponsors, Zero Res of Madison. People want a cleaner, healthier home.
You mean spending the entire quarantine locked in with bacteria and allergens isn't healthy? Who knew?
You want to get it professionally cleaned well before it gets funky. Even if you vacuum frequently.
I vacuum a lot.
You still need to get it professionally cleaned. Schedule your carpet cleaning online at ZeroResMadison.com. Tell them the Devil's Advocate sent you.
This is Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build. For almost 30 years, we've been improving, restoring, and expanding homes while also advocating for social and economic justice. Most of our clients want to build back better, while some want to make their old house great again. At Chad's Design Build, we'll listen to your needs, carefully assess your home, and then provide thoughtful solutions which respect you, your home, and your budget. We are proud of the relationships we have built. On behalf of Chad's Design Build, thank you.
You're listening to Devil Radio 92.7 and WTTN 1580 AM, and that's pretty cool.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. On the line, Sandy Williams, and we, attorney Sandy Williams, and we are talking about the outcome of the Derek Chauvin trial. You know, Sandy, there are watershed moments from time to time in the country. And this is going to be considered a watershed moment for many because, you know, as a person who clearly supports law enforcement, because as I've said many times, and at the threat of being, you know, lambasted by many in my community, we need law enforcement. Anybody who thinks that we don't need law enforcement is out of their minds. We live in a society, as you well know, that we have some folk, especially Sandy, as we've seen all of these shootings and murders and all of those things that as citizens, we can't do anything about. It is out of our, we don't know how to get to or deal with any of those things. That is what law enforcement is there for. But I've also said that blue code of silence, Sandy, that's been around too long, that has to be broken. And the brotherhood and all of those things, I get it. I understand brotherhood and all of those things. But when it comes to what law enforcement's responsibility is, similar to a doctor who takes a Hippocratic oath, law enforcement swears to uphold the law and for the protect the citizens of this country. That is a big deal, right? I mean, that's a big responsibility.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's going to be important in this, in the reform and the rethinking of policing, to make sure that obviously we have law enforcement. But I think the way it's evolved into people, and there's been studies of this, that with cops riding around in cruisers all day and never being in contact with people who aren't in fact in a perilous or dangerous situation, gives them a very strange sense of the world. So, you know, if in the old days there were beat cops who walked around or rode around, like there are some now, and they were mixing with people all day, and you know, they were mixing with good folks, you know, most of the day, and they were in many respects performing some services like social workers, you know, maybe getting a cap down from a tree or whatever. But in today's world, cops operate in their cruisers, and they are called from place, they are dispatched from place to place to hotspots, places where they are in fact in some danger, and they're seeing people behaving in terrible ways. And so I think it creates an atmosphere in which it's very, very hard for the police not to behave badly. And it's, I'm not coming up with an excuse for them. I'm coming up with an explanation for why I think we've got to rethink the police job.
Well, you know, Sandy, that's been an ongoing discussion that unfortunately politics, you know, you can't have that kind of discussion because Republicans don't want to have that kind of discussion, as if it's somehow Democrat-Republican. That's not what this is, and it's been made that way. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, but I think there was a political mistake on the left, too, because I think the whole notion of defunding police simply taking money away from law enforcement was, I think, both a goofy idea and really was kicking the can down the road without actually explaining what the solution is. And I just think that made it almost impossible for there to be a fair political debate about it. If one side is saying just take money away from cops, I don't know how you get
so,
to the
so
point.
So, Sandy, just for the record, I was never one who and spoke out publicly that was a crazy idea, an absolutely crazy idea, to at a time when, you know, murders and all of those things are at a rise, to just take money away from law enforcement. I remember, Sandy, a time when in the city of Milwaukee, as large as it was, we had about 800 police officers. Now that number is well over 2,000, and they're short, you know, the entire property tax budget of the city, you know, goes for police. And so we've got all of these, something has created that, and we want to talk a little bit about that. We've got Joe on from Madison. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the line. Attorney Sandy Williams and you were talking about the George Floyd, the Derek Chauvin trial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number on the line. Attorney Sandy Williams is my guest. Let's go to Joe from Madison. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
We're almost ready. Just one sec.
Okay.
No, Sandy's on, though.
Yeah.
Hey, Sandy. Okay, so you get to a point where the world is watching, and you know, we've had these. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to the phone lines and Joe from Madison first. Joe, thank you for waiting. You say what?
Well, first thing I want to say is to thank you very much, both you and your guests, for this discussion. It's reasoned and really worthwhile, picking up a lot of good information. And I would be curious to hear both you and your guests speak a little bit more on this subject. You broached it briefly in the previous half hour, just the waste that's involved with this situation, where, I mean, obviously the waste of losing the life of George Floyd, what that means to his family and his community, but also just looking at what was paid out by city of Minneapolis.
$27 million.
Yeah, I mean, a justifiable payout, but man, that's a heck of a lot of cash. And then to think of the police officers that had been involved in keeping down protests from getting violent, and of course
right.
people had to protest it. They had to raise their voices about this. The amount of money that's been spent on this across the country for one cop going crazy is just, I'd really love to hear you and your guests, and I'll take my answers off air, just a discussion if you had time or interest on what could be changed in policing, because I, like you, Earl, do not believe in defunding the police, but I do believe in changing some things, and I'd be really interested to hear what you two have to say about how things could be changed to avoid this just dreadful, awful waste.
Well, I'm going to yield to my guest, Sandy. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, you know, I'm really not an expert in policing per se, but there's been lots of stuff that's been written more recently about, first of all, the question of when to use force, when to actually insist upon making an arrest to the point of using force to make the arrest, in what circumstances. If the crime is trivial, then is it really appropriate to decide that it's necessary to use force to accomplish the arrest? When a man is selling Lucy cigarettes, and that's the crime he's going to be charged with, are handcuff restraints an appropriate use of policing, and even handcuff restraints? But is it appropriate to arrest the person against their resistance, or should they simply have a ticket written against them and delivered to them in some other fashion?
You know, Sandy, and I hate to interrupt you, but
yeah,
you just pointed out, you know, these minor things that police get engaged with citizenry over is one of the issues. And so you are right, but the question becomes, Sandy, aren't they doing evaluations of the candidates to become police officers before they say, yeah, this person is all right? Because it makes little sense to send a police officer out there, or for a police officer to, again, well, we're going to arrest a guy for selling Lucy cigarettes, when you can walk inside of some of these service convenience stores and they sell the Lucy cigarettes in there, you know, inside of the business, and the police aren't doing that.
Well, I think the thing that's really getting an evaluation is the notion of arrests for the kind of traffic or vehicle violation that would include turn signals that don't work,
right,
tags, the expired year registration tag on a license plate. And these are the kind of things that have actually led to deaths, because the reason police have described, in private at least, why they make these arrests is they'll think they'll find things in the car. They think they will be able to get collateral evidence against somebody because of this, the ability to stop the car. And that's what's now it's a serious question, because those kind of arrests are usually based on some kind of profiling.
And you know what, Sandy? And so the question becomes whether or not when police, if they have a quota that they have to meet, otherwise, if they don't, then why are you pulling, as you said, people over? Well, I noticed, your tail light is not working, you know. I mean, is there a danger for a motorist who has a taillight not working? Is that such a dangerous thing? And I know it can be to other pedestrians, But is that all? I mean, police have nothing more to do than those types of things?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I think taillight and these kind of stops are frequently related to the desire to make arrests for illegal substances.
Right.
And we might find that if marijuana is no longer illegal, the value police would get out of making stops like that so that they can develop a probable cause based on the smell of marijuana coming out of the car to make an arrest would defeat their inclination to stop people for tags.
Let's do this. Joe from Stevens Point. Hey, Joe, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up, Earl? Hey, Sandy. I just wanted to chime in with the, the defund the police thing. It was such an invitation for the Democrats to roll in and get out front of what they viewed as a problem. They never did. You know, it's been, 2013 that George Zimmerman was found not guilty. And that was the first time hashtag Black Lives Matter movement came about. That thing has been waiting for soft Democrats to get out in front of it. It never happened. It's been kind of a sidelined movement. And for us to sit around and wax and wane about, well, you know, we don't have the language right. We got to do, we need to do something about this. And I like that idea of taking cops, from having like a robo military machine cop come up and say, yeah, you got a taillight out. Are we waiting for invitations as Democrats? We got to get out in front. Republicans are going to use that. Democrats hate the cops. You know, they do that. They call us socialists. They do all that. So, at the end of the day, it was 5 years ago that Colin Kaepernick took a knee. If you were 15 years old 5 years ago, you're 21 years old now. If you were 13, you're 18. They're all voting now, or they're going to vote. And it's like, I don't know, man. We just got to get out in front of this one and start doing something for Black people in this country. So,
let me say this, that. Joe, from the perspective of a Black person who has seen many cases over my 67 years of living that made me even say to people that I didn't think that, Mr. Chauvin was going to be found guilty, because I had seen so many instances of men who have lost their lives. And let's be clear, police and what they do, I've seen them abuse a lot of white folk too. And if there's something about the officers who do these types of things, because I know too many officers who don't, and Black and white. I know too many good officers who don't do those types of things. That's why I've always had the debate with people that you can't throw them all in the same bag.
I just wanted to jump in a bit. I think Joe had the right point, though, that that we've had all these years to actually do something and get something done. And my view is that the Democrats typically make a mistake of overreaction. The idea of defunding the police meant that if you essentially adopted that position, you were against police. And being against police is a pretty, you can maybe say we've got to change policing. We've got to make policing a better job for the police as well as for the public. And there's lots of ways to structure the discussion. But to start, come out of the blocks with take all the money away from the police was, I thought, a way to defeat the conversation let it start.
So let me respond to that. And Joe, you can hang on. When I first heard that conversation, defund the police, I publicly came out and said it's ridiculous. Why? Because I live in an urban center where the murder rate in the community in which I live is one of the worst in the entire nation. and it has been for some time. So I would be foolish to say defund the police where I live. And we've seen, and so, you know, when I would talk with people who would say that, I would say to them, well, you know, the people who are causing the crimes, the people who are killing other innocent people, the people who are causing mayhem and terrifying the taxpayers and the elderly and the children, who's going to stop them? So if we say defund the police, I could understand that if you've gotten to a point where you're not having the crime rate that we have in the city where I live. But I've never been one who supported that based on the fact that where we live is too dangerous.
Yeah, and the folly of that position was that it just handed an argument to the conservatives.
Let me chime in with this. I think that we're misreading it, that we're letting it be framed up by Fox News.
Hang on, guys. We've got to go to a break. We're long. Okay. And Joel, hang with us. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Erlinger Show. My guest is Attorney Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. On the line, Attorney Sandy Williams. We're talking about the outcome of the Officer Chauvin trial. Joe, I think there was something you were saying
Yeah, I was just making the point that I think defund the police is a Fox News framing talking point. That it's well timed that the Democrats redefine what defund the police means, because they're going to be charged with that. We are going to be charged with that as Democrats. You know, that movement has been a bust. Today is a bitter, sweet moment because there's so much work to be done. We still have not defined what that means. For us to sit around and just say, well, we didn't have the right language, it we're still left with this. The Black Lives Matter is they've been put on ice and chilled, and there is no reforms that have happened since 2013 and the rise of that movement. People are in the streets. It is not, they don't want to be in the streets. They don't want to be posted up against, but we're not getting anything right either. And I do believe defund the without clarifying what defund the police means, it could mean like getting rid of that blanket qualified immunity, you know, start there. But Democrats are really weak when it comes to this stuff. And they really like to fall like into that pigeonhole, like, well, I don't want to defund the police. Well, no. Well, what does it mean? Get out in front of that thing, because it's not going away. And hey, Trayvon Martin is dead for a long time.
Hey, Joe, man, thank you very much for the call.
Take care.
You know, Sandy, I guess, you know, the defund the police discussion is certainly one that has resonated. But I think where we are right now and today with the outcome of this trial, there are people who breathe a sigh of relief. I do believe this to be true. I don't have any proof, but there are police officers today and this evening who are maybe going to take a long look in the mirror, especially those officers who are so aggressive, I just think that that's what happened today. More than anything else, it's going to have officers take another look at themselves so they don't wind up like Officer Chauvin.
Well, and I think people should ask themselves, why did Chauvin end up like Chauvin? I mean, it might have something to do with what policing has turned into, as well as the process they go through for interviewing and figuring out who should be policemen in the first place. But, you know, I suspect that, you know, we have some sympathy for military officers who come back from war and have their minds have been changed.
Right.
And they aren't who they were. And I suspect that there's some of that going on with police, the way the job is designed. So I hope that what comes out of this is that instead of AOC